Are you listening?
It's Anything and Everything with Mel.
Damn.
Thanks for listening, everyone. This is Anything and Everything with Matt. I am here today with Brandy Marucius. How are you doing today?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, good.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming on. I know you're pretty busy all the time. It's good to finally get you out here.
Yeah.
Nice beautiful day finally on a Saturday. You got the first one of the month, I think.
Gorgeous.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about yourself.
So my name is Brandy Marucius. I am a resident of Highland, Indiana. I was raised in Valparaiso. Mm-hmm. And I went to Ivy Tech Community College in Valparaiso. I earned my associate's degree, and then I transferred to IUN for my bachelor's in general studies with a minor in psychology. And now I am in my final month, woohoo!
Nice.
Final month of grad school, getting my master's in social work, mental health, and addictions.
Wow.
And I'm currently completing my field hours for my internship at Ivy Tech Community College in Valparaiso, the same school that I graduated from. And my position there is I'm a life coach. So I help students achieve success through helping them overcome barriers. I connect them with resources. I help them with crisis intervention, stress management. And it's just really, it's amazing working with students, because back when I went to Ivy Tech, we didn't have that service available. We didn't have counselors or any kind of life coach to help us. And there were several times when I kind of wanted to quit. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it would have been nice to have that service there. So I'm really thrilled that Ivy Tech is offering this service now.
Yeah, it's cool that that just being recognized as a whole career field in general now. Mm-hmm. More of like, it's I think we're realizing, based on how much disconnect we're getting from technology, I think we're really realizing how much connection we are needing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And this is where life coaching is really helpful and stuff like that. And I saw that we offered a life coach at the school, and I was like, I didn't even know that was here. And that's awesome that was a thing. So that's something that's always been an idea for me for a career path, just because I love helping push people in the right direction and be their best self, in a sense. And as soon as I saw that, I knew I had to get in touch with you and just figure out what it was about and figure out how it's done, and basically how to get my foot in the door kind of with it. But we kind of met up after that and had a couple of conversations, and one thing led to another. Now I got you on the podcast.
Yeah.
Now we can really have a good conversation.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. I admire what you do, and I'd like to hear more about it. So like, what's a big question for me, I guess, with life coaching. When I think of life coaching, the first thing that comes into my head is, you know, coaching someone's life in a way where, not just like what counseling does, like it's not like a pill pusher in a sense where you're diagnosing someone with a problem and then you give them medicine for it. It's not more of like a counselor who's gonna, it's in a sense it's kind of like a counselor who will talk with you, but I feel like you have more freedom than a counselor does, right?
Yes, and that's exactly true. And so I think it's important to understand the difference between life coaching and therapy,
yeah.
Right? Therapy, you're bound by very strict ethical guidelines. And while life coaches are still bound by those same guidelines, it offers a little bit more flexibility. So when a client comes to me as a life coach, I don't look at them as, okay, you have a problem, I need to diagnose you, I need to treat you. Regular everyday people could come to me simply because they want to improve areas in their life, or mm-hmm. you could be someone that comes in with a problem that wants to help build the skills to manage their problems.
Yeah.
And so, you know, rather than, you know, helping the client with regard to improving themselves, hey, if a student comes to me and they say, you know what, I really want to manage my stress through exercise, but I don't have the time to do it, what can we do about it? I will go with them to the gym and work out with them and be a liaison for them.
Cool.
That offers a little bit of flexibility.
Yeah.
And then it's just nice because we're focused on the here and now and the future, whereas therapy is really focused on the past and resolving those past issues. And while we might touch on the past in life coaching, we're more geared towards what we're doing now, how we can improve the future.
Okay.
And then there's also this implication of questions regarding ethics and the social work practices. So because life coaching is such a new thing, And it's still legitimizing itself as a legitimate career, mm-hmm. There's going to be a little bit of a paradigm shift. And what I mean by shift is, you know, the network of professional social workers will have to figure out what is appropriate regarding ethics and what is not. You know, can you do phone sessions? Is that ethical? Can you meet somebody in the grocery store to help them mm-hmm. shop for healthier alternatives? That's more hands-on of what a life coach does yeah. versus a therapist. But you still have to take into consideration that this is a new field and you always have to, you know, revert back to the code of ethics and client confidentiality, things of that nature yeah. that you have to take into consideration. Yeah.
So it seems like there definitely is more freedom than sitting in a setting of a counselor setting, you know, in a therapist setting.
Exactly.
Which, in a sense, can sometimes be what people really need. Sometimes the past is the past and there's nothing you can do about it. Sometimes I don't necessarily think people need to bring out the past and try to... healing is definitely necessary, I get that. But it's also important, which, not saying therapy doesn't help with, but it's also important to heal those wounds, almost cauterize those wounds, you know, and just move on. And in a sense, like, because life doesn't stop for anybody, you know, and you really do have to, especially if you have a really busy life, if you have obligations that you can't just put a pause on your life, you know, if you're still living at home, if you're still being supported in a way where you can take a break, that's fine. But yeah, sometimes people need to get right back out there. So it's good to have a friend in mm-hmm. a sense, other than a counselor, right. other than someone you'd have to go and check in with. It's good to have a life coach where it doesn't feel like a counselor. It feels like a friend. It feels like someone who genuinely cares about you, and you go for them for advice, for life advice, for anything, for time management, for happiness, loneliness, whatever you want, anything under the sun, you know?
And that's another thing, and you raised a great point with the whole advice thing, because as far as therapy, it is a big no-no to give advice. Mm-hmm. You can use questioning to help the client come to their own conclusions, but life coaching is a little bit more flexible in that area. You can give them a little bit of that tough love that they may need.
Yeah.
You can give them a little bit of advice here and there. We're not telling them what to do by any means, but therapy is 100%, you know, I don't know how many times I've had clients come to me when I was a counselor at the methadone clinic and saying, well, you're the expert, you tell me. Mm-hmm. Well, no, my goal is to help you come to your own conclusions through proper questioning. And with life coaching, if I have advice, it would probably be based on either empirical evidence or my own personal experience. And that is another thing that's different from therapy is, you know, in therapy, you definitely don't want to self-disclose unless it is 100% beneficial to the client.
Yeah.
You don't want to talk too much about yourself because it's not about you.
Yeah.
In life coaching, it is not uncommon for you to say, you know what, I hear you're going through this issue. I went through this too. And this is what helps me.
Mm-hmm. So, that's cool. That yeah. I think that in a sense would be more effective.
Exactly.
And it's crazy that therapy has these laws that you have to follow, because we all know that no one works by these cookie cutter set of rules. Mm-hmm. Everyone is different, just like a classroom. It's like putting someone in a classroom and expecting all the kids to learn the same way from the same teacher, from the same method. It's like that's why there's kids that are succeeding better and there are kids who aren't. You know, you got to appeal to all levels of learning. And the same thing when it comes to therapy and connecting with people, you know, like just being around, like, just having you as a friend has improved my life too, because like I don't have a lot of people in my life that I guess have a lot of good feedback when it comes to advice. Maybe it's just because they're not good at wording stuff, or maybe it doesn't resonate well with me. But when it comes with like you and stuff, you actually genuinely care and ask about my well-being and care about like my progress, and also just sit and listen and not like, well, just sit and listen, which is important. Even if you aren't listening and you're just pretending, it still feels good, you know? It feels like you're listening and it does the same effect, you know? And I think so many people don't have that shit. So many people are lacking that connection, even with their family, let alone, even if they're with their loved ones. you may be living with someone that you may have never feel so far away from. And yeah. I've experienced that firsthand. You know, I had a girlfriend in the past that I eventually moved in with, and I've never felt so distant. And that can, it just, when you don't have it, you realize how much you need it,
mm-hmm.
you know? And when you have too much of it, you don't realize how much you appreciate it, you know?
Exactly.
It's funny how stuff like that works in life.
Yeah, you and know? You know, these are the types of skills that I've learned throughout my internship program is, you know, I had a team working underneath me, and I had never had a team before where I was in charge of, you know, everything. I'm not a leader, I'm a follower, yeah. you know? Tell me what to do and I'll do it. But this is totally different, took me totally out of my comfort zone. And it was brought to my attention that, you know, some of my team members were not, they didn't feel as engaged in the process. And so, you know, that really, I'm not gonna lie, I was a little butthurt about that. But then I was like, you know what? This is a learning experience. So I get in my car after being told this news. I have about a 45-minute drive home from my internship, and I looked up TED Talks on how to, you know, engage people, make them feel special, make them feel valued, you know, which is what you said that I was doing with yeah. you. And it was, the conclusion that I came to was that, you know what, it doesn't always have to be about work. Just as something as simple as asking someone how their day is, yep. how their children are, how work is going, will really establish that collaborative relationship that you need outside of work. Because in turn, people are going to turn around and tell people, you know what, that's a good person. That person, mm-hmm. I'm motivated to help that person because that person genuinely cares
yeah.
about me.
Yeah.
So yeah. that's how, that was the lesson that I learned with my internship is, you know what, establish collaborative relationships and mm-hmm. alliances with your coworkers and with everyone around you, because that type of energy, that type of empathy and caring for someone, it's contagious.
You read my mind. I was just saying that I have been, the past couple years, I've been becoming addicted to spreading like positivity, because mm-hmm. it really is addictive. When you do that to me, when I feel that experience of someone listening and hearing my words and just being that type of friend, like that makes me want to do it for other people. Realizing how it makes me feel, that it is contagious. You're like, right. It makes you want to do it for other people. And that, in a sense, and I think that is like, people talk crazy about the internet and how technology is going to take humanity down and all this stuff, but I really see so much more than that. I see that it's bringing us together in such a different way when it comes to like empathy and stuff. Like, yeah, I think the whole world is like is really moving in the direction where like when you send out that positivity, this conversation alone is going to resonate with a lot of people in a way that it was just having between me and you before,
right?
You know, and I think that it's the butterfly effect that this will have and could have is just limitless, you know? It really is, like, it makes me wanna act out of altruism, you mm-hmm. know, and act out of the greatness of, like, not expecting anything in return.
Right.
You know, not even karma, just, like, just acting out of, because it feels good to act that way.
Right.
You know? And I think that part is truly contagious, you know? And I admire when I come across people in life who actually genuinely care about other people's well-being.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. And the thing is, you know, towards the end of the semester, professors have been having me do some presentations in the class to talk about the life coaching services. And while I was sitting there preparing my presentation, I was thinking, you know what? It's the last month of the semester, a little too late to be talking about services. I'll include the services in there. But now it's about survival, yeah. right? Now it's about getting through finals, getting through all of the big milestones so that you can actually pass, right? So the last presentation I did was actually very helpful. It was more of a discussion group type of presentation. And a lot of that, I asked the students, what are your motivations? What gets you up in the morning? what drives you to do what it is that you do? A lot of them said, you know what, I want a better future. I want financial security. Some others said, you know, I do this for my kids. Mm-hmm. I do this for my family. So, and then we kind of dove into what's more important, the process or the goal. I had some students say, they're equally important. I had some students say, well, the goal is more important, obviously, because that's why you wake up in the morning. Yeah. And then I had some people say the process is most important. And I told them, you know what? They are important, but focusing on the process, each individual task will help you get to your goal. Mm-hmm. If you're, you know, Michael Jordan playing in the Bulls back in the 90s when they were relevant, if they focused so much on, oh, I want to win, I want to win, I want to win, I want to win, they're going to psych themselves out and they're going to lose.
Yeah.
But if they focus on not I want to win, but how am I going to win? What are the steps
connecting the dots,
they will ultimately reach their goal. Right. So we focused on that. And then the next part of the presentation was mainly focused on like little tips and tricks for, you know, stress management. And one of them was an analogy that I used for self-care. So my husband, he watches NASCAR every Sunday, right? And I don't really watch it, but one thing that anyone can figure out is that that's probably the most entertaining part about NASCAR is when they crash. But no matter what, every single professional racer has to have a strategy to get to the finish line. Mm-hmm. And one part of that strategy is they have to pull over into the pit for maintenance. Hmm. If a race car driver doesn't pull into the pit for maintenance, guess what? They're not making it to the finish line.
Hmm.
So regardless of how hard you work, self-care and maintenance is tremendously important.
Yeah.
So I can't stress that enough.
Interesting.
Yeah, I can't stress that enough. You cannot get anywhere in life without putting time and effort into yourself and self-care.
Good analogy.
Exactly,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it is a really good analogy.
My husband's going to get on
NASCAR. It's a good analogy.
My husband's going to get on my case and I get home because he's going to be like, you hate NASCAR.
I think the NASCAR fans would appreciate that.
Oh, I think so. I think so. So, yeah. So we talked a little bit about self-care. And then after that, we talked about mindfulness, being in the here and now. So an analogy I used for that was, you know, when I was younger, I used to say on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, oh my gosh, I can't wait to get to Friday. Oh my gosh, I can't wait till the weekend. I hate Mondays. I hate Tuesdays. I don't like Wednesdays. Thursdays is okay because it's almost a Friday. And guess what happened? I was missing out on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Mm-hmm. That's 4 days.
Mm-hmm.
And only appreciating two or three,
wow.
You know? So if we really appreciate being in the moment, stopping and smelling the roses, looking around you and looking at something as simple as, you know what? I have clean, fresh water. I have shelter. I can breathe. I can see. Mm-hmm. I can feel. I can taste. You know, look at that gorgeous bird on the tree. Mm-hmm. You know, just really taking your time to just appreciate the here and now is so important.
And you know what's crazy is, like, we don't appreciate things like that because we have them all the time.
Right.
And it's same thing when it comes to, like, I even notice when I have strep throat, like, if you have strep throat, like, you don't appreciate how good it feels to swallow normally, you know?
That's a very good analogy.
Like, for real. Like, you don't appreciate every normal swallow you take 24 hours a day. Let alone, like, when it comes to living in the Midwest, I give this analogy a lot. Like, the fact that we live in the Midwest makes us very appreciative of this, of all seasons.
Right.
We appreciate the winter because when at the end of the summer, we're begging for the colder weather. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the winter, we're begging for the warm weather. It's like people on the coasts don't appreciate the sun like we do. They don't have that relationship like that. And the same thing goes for clean water. People in Flint will probably die for a freaking clean sip of water, you know what I'm saying? Like, so there's places, you know, and it's crazy how we work like that. We get so used to things like that, we forget to appreciate them.
Right.
And I think this is where mindfulness comes in. This is where, is it taking a breath and looking at everything in your life and learning to appreciate everything in it? It's more of just like being aware of what you have and what others don't.
Right.
Even just the fact that we all have two legs and a mouth that talks, You know, like, everything is such a blessing that we almost, like, just take for total granted.
It's definitely gratitude, and gratitude will get you a lot farther, especially when you're going through troubling times. It's so easy to just focus on the negative.
You're right.
But just being grateful for what you do have. I mean, right now, I am under a tremendous amount of stress at school. Mm-hmm. I've never experienced this kind of stress in my entire life. With trying to balance, you know, being a wife, being a mom, you know, going to school, doing an internship, having somewhat of a social life, you know, it's so difficult. But I always have to remind myself, like, you know what? I was born in Jamaica, okay? Wow. And I could have easily stayed in Jamaica where there's not as much opportunity. And so there's some women still out in the world that don't have rights and... they don't have the privilege of going to school. So I constantly have to keep myself in check, especially because I'm helping clients. I cannot tell a client, you know, or help a client do something when I'm not doing it myself.
Exactly.
You know.
It keeps you in check and keeps you humble. Like it,
exactly.
That is such an important thing that I've learned over the course of my life, too. And I still got a lot to learn. Definitely not saying I don't. And one of the main things that I've really been into lately, too, is... I've gotten this question a lot, and now that I have you on, I would love to see your opinion on it. But I get this question. I have kind of asked this question to myself for a while now, and I've been breaking it down for a while, so I feel like I'm a little bit into the game already. So I kind of have a feeling of what I like to do. But I come across a lot of people who have the trouble of figuring out what they are passionate about, because... they have been guided down this path since middle school or since high school, either by their parents or by the establishment, to pursue some certain career, but it's not what they're passionate about. Mm-hmm. And they wake up when they're 20s and realize that I'm going down a path I hate. I'm going down a path that I'm going to see myself miserable in, right? How do you take someone who is completely lost at sea, who has taken a complete left turn a long time ago and is very, very far away from what they loved, from discovering what they love to do, and just not, like, not even knowing where to begin and how to find it. Mm-hmm. Where do you take that person, and how do you take them on a journey to figure out what they like? They could like building sandcastles, and they would never know. You know what I'm saying? Like, something like that, as crazy that is, but you would never know what this person loves because they've literally done nothing but sit under a car engine all day or something like that. Mm-hmm. So what would you do to someone like that? How would you do?
Well, before I answer that question, I want to give you a little bit of background about what happened with me and my self-determination and finding out what my passions were.
Okay.
So all of my undergraduate degree, I didn't know what I wanted to do, which is why I went for general studies with a minor in psychology. But I knew I was going to pursue, you know, my education further. And so I figured, okay, I'll just get this out of the way and then, you know, figure out what I want to do later. And I still didn't know what I wanted to do. You know, I thought, you know, maybe psychology, because my mom went to school for psychology, you know, that thing where, you know, you feel like that's where you should.
That was your pull because of nurture.
Yeah, exactly. So I didn't have any required internships, but I decided that, you know, I need to do an internship to figure out what I wanted to do. And, you know, law kept coming up, criminal law, that's what I wanted to do. So I decided to intern at the Porter County Victims Assistance Unit, and I worked with the prosecutor, and I was a victim's advocate. So basically, when you have someone in a domestic violence or conversion case, no contact orders would be in place. And so a lot of times the defendant and the victim couldn't be in court at the same time due to the contact order, the no contact order. So I would have to go in representing the victim and keep them updated on, you know, what's going on with the court proceedings and whatnot. And while I really enjoyed that internship working in law and everything, I really liked more of the social impact that law had versus the technicalities of law. But I still I still went forward and, you know, pursued the whole law thing. Yeah. I took some prep courses. I took the LSATs. took prep courses for the LSATs, and then I took the LSATs. I applied to every law school that I could in Chicago and then Valparaiso University, and nobody accepted me. Now, if I was 21, 22 years old, I would have tried again and again and again and again until I got it. I was 28 at the time. So I didn't have that much time. You know, I wanted to settle down, have kids. I wanted to be done by a certain time. I didn't have another year to try again to get denied, because the way it works with the LSATs is it's not a pass or fail kind of thing. It's highly competitive. So whatever score you get, no matter what, there's always going to be someone better than you, smarter than you, nerdier than you. And they're the colleges are going to pick them over you. You know what I mean? Unless you just by chance end up happening to be with someone on the same, you know, plane as you.
Yeah.
Regarding LSAT scores, you're pretty much screwed, you know. So that's when I realized, you know what? I want to work in criminal social work. So what I plan to do is work on recidivism and help people that have been in jail or prisons that are institutionalized, help them build the resources and job skills that they need to be productive members of society.
Cool.
Exactly. So that was my original passion.
Recidivism.
So keeping them out of the, you know, keeping them from coming back, saving taxpayer dollars, and just really help. Because a lot of times these people come out of jail or prison with criminal records, no one wants to hire them.
Yeah.
And then it's, and then they get, you know, society's like, oh, well, these people are bad because they broke into my house to feed my kids. Well, guess what? Nobody will hire them because they're not credible.
Yeah.
So I wanted to work in that type of field. So that's how I learned what my passion was. Now, going back to the question that you were asking me about, based on my experience, what I would do is, if you think you're interested in something, go volunteer. Go somewhere where you think you might be interested in something and say, hey, I'm really interested in this field, but I don't want to invest a bunch of money in school unless I know that I like it. Would you mind some free work? Would you mind some volunteer work? And I'm telling you, nobody's going to turn down free work.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be willing to do it, and you have to be willing to put in all of the effort that you can. But experience, life experience, is what teaches you exactly where it is that you want to be in life. Now, the whole LSAT thing, I wasted $3,000 on prep courses. I wasted 2 years of my life, but it wasn't a waste. You know why? Because the LSAT still taught me material that that helped me in the social work program.
Mm-hmm.
And what was the best is that I didn't have any regret of wondering what if. Mm-hmm. And I figured out what it is that I wanted to do.
Yeah, that's what you got out of it.
Exactly.
It was a journey, it may be a detour, but at the end, you figured out your passion.
Exactly.
And everyone takes so many different life courses. Some people got to go on soul searches across the country. Some people have to really hit rock bottom. The answer that I give people who ask that question to me is, you have to leave the driveway. You have to get out there and experience life. You have to try new things. You have to step outside your comfort zone. You have to try things you've never thought you'd tried before when it comes to everything from food to actions to behaviors that you, if you always wanted to smile and be happy without a reason, try it. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you want to be that person that is like, is always chill, just do it. Just try to act always chill. Like, just apply these different ways in your life. Like, I think that's the only way you're going to be able to come to any conclusion. You know, like, you have how many weeks left in your life to live? And all you really need to do is take a couple of those weeks to experiment.
Mm-hmm.
And you may find something that you freaking would spend the rest of those weeks loving. You know, like, it's just really important to have that, because then you're going to wake up when you're older and really regret a lot.
Exactly. You know? And it's also important to keep in mind that a lot of people that are in the careers that they genuinely love didn't go to school for those careers. They have a degree in something completely unrelated.
Yeah.
And so I think it's important to know that if you have a degree, even if you end up working in a field that is not related to that concentration, it's still going to help you, because they look at the fact that you committed to something and completed that commitment. You accomplished it. So perhaps a social work master's degree isn't sufficient for corporate America, but it's still a master's degree. So
yeah, I think it's important to follow. Sometimes you have a gut feeling about something, and you know, you don't have to turn it down all the time. Like, I think there's more neurons in your heart and in your gut than there are in your brain, or just as many, or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you feel something with your heart, you have an intuition, a gut intuition. It's literally because you got neurons in there, mm-hmm. and there's something in there. There's something that we don't know about, but there's speculation that you can actually, in a sense, have some thought with your gut, like in a sense, some connection.
Yeah, and that introduces the whole fight or flight response, right? And your gut is, you know, your brain, sometimes it can be wrong. Mm-hmm. Your heart, most definitely your emotions are wrong.
Oh, yeah.
Your gut...
That's like your sixth sense. That's exactly. Like your spider sense right there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just, but yeah, this was, I love these conversations, you know, like it's important to talk about these things. So many people are just living day to day and never in their life will have this conversation with someone, which is just crazy. Like, because everyone's got to think these types of thoughts at some point in their life. Everyone's got to have regrets. Everyone's got to have what ifs. Everyone's got to have... just speculation and also desire to open up to people, you know? Mm-hmm. And so many people don't get that stuff. It's just, we're in such a weird world where we're so connected yet disconnected, but...
Yeah, and I think technology has done a very good job at keeping us connected but disconnected.
Yeah.
And I think also, you know, with the whole recession that we went through now, you know, it just seems like it's about survival and I'm not going to help you unless you help me kind
yeah.
of thing. And so I think that people innately are born with the desire to progress in life, but life just kind of gets in the way
yeah.
of that.
Yeah.
So
it's, and this whole recent life, like as a speaking from like a human being, the human body and the way that our reward system works and our brain and stuff, we weren't meant to just live for another person to get rich.
Mm-hmm.
We weren't meant to wake up and put all of our time towards getting enough coin to feed ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like we our bodies were used to going and hunting and earning our food and running for food and like spending our days with our fan and family in our communities, and we just for the past couple hundreds of years we've been in this weird 9-to-5 type of thing where, you know, we're just living in a sense and giving our time away to something else, some conglomerate, some person making one person really rich while you're struggling just to get by every day to pay for a house that you can barely live in because you got to keep going to work to,
mm-hmm.
you know, you just get there, you're basically just paying for it to sleep in, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's, there's rooms in your house you'll never walk in because you don't have time to. It's just crazy, the world that we live in. And I think maybe it's going to get past that through automation, through robots and stuff like
mm-hmm.
that, through, you know, technology helping us and maybe... decreasing the workload and stuff, but
mm-hmm.
I just think that this whole cycle of making someone else rich is a very it's a weird way to live.
It is.
You know, if you're going to sink all your time and energy into something, it should be for yourself.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, but you got to understand that there's also, you know, two different kinds of people. And there's more than two, but the two that I'm going to highlight is you have people that are always striving for better. And you have people that coast through life.
Yeah.
And some people are content with coasting through life. Some people are happy with, you know what, I did my 9-to-5. I'm going to come home to my kids. You know what, I didn't go to college, but I got a good job. Or you know what, I really don't like my job, but it pays the bills and I'm content with that.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have people that are always striving for better. Always striving to be the best that they can be and do more and be more. And so it's not that the people that are content with the way things are, the coasters, are complacent or lazy, but their idea of happiness and someone else's idea of happiness are two different things. So for me, happiness is just being in the here and now, accepting people for who they are, accepting myself for who I am.
Yeah.
Man, that acceptance thing, if you can really build that skill of accepting people for who they are, the resentments just go away.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not saying make excuses for people. I'm saying this is the way they are. Accept it for the way things are. Accept things that you cannot control. Gratitude, those are my ideas of happiness.
Yeah.
But everyone's definition of happiness is different.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I mean, me personally, I feel like we're just in such a rat race of just trying to get by, and we're just trying to survive, that, you know, it really distracts us from what we really need to take care of and what's the most important, which is ourselves and the people that we love.
Yeah. Because once you, that's something I recently finally like figured out too, was for a long time I did not take care of myself at all, mentally or physically. Just kind of was constantly worrying about other people. I still had a good heart, I still had good intentions, but I was completely focused on outward and not inward. I was always keeping other people in check around me when it comes to making sure they were happy, making sure my actions weren't coming off in a bad, like, I was always making sure I was making them happy, living for them and not myself. And you know, just recently I've made, over the past maybe 7 months, I've made the decision to start living for myself and living for what I want to do, pursuing what I want to do. And it's truly been a huge eye-opener for me when it comes to, because once you do love yourself, it's so much easier to love others. It's so much easier to accept others. Because you in turn learn a lot about yourself and how you're not perfect and how there's a lot of shit you gotta just accept and and cope with, and there's a lot of things that you are lacking on that you have to learn, and like you just see that in other people. You see that they're just like what Joe Rogan says. He says that once he had kids, I haven't had kids yet, but I can see how people can get this idea, and you probably know what I'm talking about. But he says once he had kids, after that he realized, like, seeing a kid grow up and seeing a baby form into a person, like a little human figure out the world, he said that he sees everybody as a baby. He sees even the oldest man, the biggest, oldest, racist person he sees at some point was just a little dumb baby, and life screwed him up. You know what I'm saying? But like that, he was an innocent baby at some point, who either had a shitty life, you know, raising, or he encountered some stuff in his life that guided him down that path. But that's a cool way to look at it, you know, because we all are, in a sense, innocent at heart.
Yeah.
You know, or at least were.
And that is actually an amazing point that you made, because a lot of times, you know, let's say you have some racist guy and he's just like, you know, oh, that colored boy, you know. Everyone's going to focus on the fact that he's racist, but no one's focusing on why. Is it his fault that he's racist, or was he conditioned to be that way? So looking at people's, not just their behavior, but where their behavior stems from, you know, I've had, you know, so many people tell me that my views, my political views are wrong and, you know, this and that. But really, it's where I was raised, what I was brought up with, what I was around, what I was conditioned to think and feel and behave like.
Yeah.
And so I think that nowadays, especially when it comes to politics and, you know, controversial issues, no one's thinking about, okay, where was this person raised? What kind of trauma did they go through as a child? Why are they behaving the way that they are? And I think if someone starts crap with you in the streets or starts a fight with you, rather than engaging in that argument, you have to think, okay, you know what? This person may not know better. This person may have been raised in an abusive home. It really helps you think and empathize with other people. Like, look, this person probably went through a whole ton of crap to be acting the way that they are. And so it really helps with that whole acceptance factor.
And once you start seeing the world like that, it's almost like the Matrix. You take the blue pill, the red pill. Like, you can't see the world differently after that. It's hard to see people not like that.
Right.
Once you see people as a product of society instead of just, you know, a piece of shit asshole, it definitely helps you accept them more and just be more forgiving and understanding. Doesn't mean you have to like them at all, but it means that you can have sympathy for them.
Right.
But not like rude sympathy, like, I'm so sorry for you, sir. Like,
yeah, more don't like, do that. I understand.
Yeah, like, I understand. Yeah. Like, you just, yeah, I wouldn't even say
you're ignorant, not in a bad way or anything. Yeah. You just don't know any better.
Yeah, bro. Yeah. You just have to understand how the world, that's how it works. Yeah. You know? But it's having these conversations, putting these thoughts in people's minds and in younger minds. The younger you start, the better. But this is how you fix it. This is the only way to fix it. You're not going to be able to crack a lot of these eggs in the country. A lot of these racists who are 80 years old are going to be racist till they die. Mm-hmm. That's just a fact. But the conversation, the thought patterns that we want to create in these younger children and stuff, that is so important. That is something that will stick with them forever. Right. It'll be like a good sickness that you can't get out of your head of looking at people in a way like, the reason why I'm really into this now is because I remember this starting when I was very young. I remember I was at Disney World. I can pinpoint the time when I remember these thought experiences I would start having. I remember I was at Disney World when I was probably like 10 years old, and I would see other kids, and I would imagine myself in their shoes. It was a weird experiment, but I would imagine like if I was part of that family. Not that I didn't like my family, because I love my family, but I was just like, when I was like sitting up, because I was the kid who wouldn't go on the roller coasters, so I had a lot of people, like sights, people watching time in my hands. So I would like just watch families and watch people and stuff. Sometimes I'd sit with some of my family if my grandparents went and stuff, but eventually I got old enough to not need a parent. But I would do a lot of sightseeing and stuff, and one of the things was I would picture myself, I'd play a game where I'd imagine myself in that person's shoes. And I think I unknowingly, it started to have an effect on me thinking like the person, experiencing how they would feel, mm-hmm. and stuff like that, or experiencing their excitement, you know, and all that different stuff. And I remember having these thoughts, like these really complex thoughts that were kind of trippy when I was a kid. Because I remember it was like some of my deepest thoughts as a kid. I would remember how, what are the odds of me being born in this perspective, in this life, in these shoes, like in this body? And I would remember having these like weird epiphanies, and this would start to get me to think outside other perspectives, you know? And I think this is just a way of describing how maybe it goes on in a little kid's brain and how he experiences it, but I remember it vividly how it happened. And I think we could create that with other people, with other little kids. I think teaching them empathy, teaching them how to put yourself in other people's shoes, and how to put yourself in your friend's shoes and people that you don't necessarily can't compare yourself to. I think that is so important. Yeah. So important. You know, it's what's brought empathy in, and I think it's what's the fuel to it today.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that, it's funny that you say that, because I actually have a friend who, she was talking about mindfulness, and she didn't have any like empirical data to back this up, but she said that she truly believes that kids are born mindful. Yeah. And
I can see that.
Right?
I felt it.
And the thing is, my daughter, like, some of the most simple things amuse her. And that is what she meant by mindfulness. And so maybe that's what you're describing.
Yeah.
What you were experiencing is mindfulness. Kids were not raised to hate. Kids were not raised to be entitled.
Yeah.
Kids were raised to be entitled. Kids were raised to be, you know, hateful. You know, those are taught things.
Yes.
But kids are genuinely not taught, they weren't innately born to hate. They weren't innately, you know, born to have such negative thoughts.
Yeah.
And so when you're born mindful and you really appreciate the here and now like a child, and you're really able to empathize and look at how life would be from another person's perspective, mm-hmm. it really goes to show you that the noise of everyday life when you become an adult can be quite distracting.
It is.
Yeah.
It very is. And you realize how much adulthood and just life conditions you into the person you become.
Exactly.
You know, and you try to resort to like those feelings of like looking at people like you were a kid. I think that's super important. Like, we come back to that. Like, it's just, that's one of the main things I still do today, and I think I'll always do, and teach my kids. It's like, I think the world would just look a lot differently if mm-hmm. everyone had that same mindset and went through the same type of experience that I had.
Yeah,
just,
but it's important to recognize, though, that, you know, children today are not what they were before. So
You're very right. I didn't even think about that. Holy shit.
Children are conditioned to use... Oh my gosh, I don't even know if it's a good breed either.
No.
They're
not even raised by kid parents anymore. They're by the internet.
Technology, yeah. I mean, the whole entitlement thing, the whole lack of wanting to hear other people's perspective. Participation trophies.
Whoa.
You know, now, like, okay, back when I was in school, they would hold you back a grade if you didn't pass. Now,
they don't do that?
No. They just keep passing you on.
No.
On. And on until
what?
Yeah, no, I'm dead.
No, what do you do?
I swear to God,
what do you do as a fifth grade dummy?
Well, they just tell you, look, you don't have enough credits to graduate. You know, that's how it goes. Because I've seen it happen.
So they hold you back in like fifth grade, in a sense, till you catch up with your.
No, they don't hold you back. They just keep passing you on. The teachers don't get paid enough to put effort into anything.
That's so sad.
And then they get to high school and they're not prepared. And then they get to senior year and then they're told, well, you don't have enough credits to graduate. Back when I was a kid, you didn't have the credits, you didn't pass.
Yeah. I hear stories about kids getting held back in kindergarten because they couldn't color in the lines.
Yeah. Yeah.
Metaphorically. But yeah, I mean, like, it's just crazy, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that's... Whoa, the standards are getting low.
Someone even told me the other day, she said her daughter's homework got sent back because she completed it too early. So here is this whole...
No.
No, I'm serious. Here is this whole everybody is equal thing. And while it looks great on paper, is it really practical?
Fuck no.
Why would you want to progress and be better with your life? Be a doctor, be a lawyer, be an entrepreneur, be a business person, if you're as equal as a person working at McDonald's flipping burgers.
Yeah.
So it's this whole mentality of everyone gets a participation trophy. Everyone, you know, you get a trophy like Oprah. And that's just the way society's conditioned. They turn this whole, you know, racial equality thing into something else to where now people just don't want to strive to be better.
Yeah.
You know, and while equality is great, everyone should be equal, is it practical? These kids are going to graduate high school and think they're equal to everyone else and then just learn that, oh my gosh, that's not the way the world works.
Cognitive equality is a very dangerous slope.
Yes.
Like that, we cannot... No, you should progress based on how we've done it forever.
Exactly.
Based on your cognitive ability.
Exactly.
You should not progress on a bar level with everybody, because that would be absurd.
Yeah.
I remember kids in my grade getting held back for a very good reason.
Right, exactly.
Like, I couldn't imagine them continue, like, if they were in the group, like, no way.
Yeah, like, I can understand with, like, racial issues and affirmative action
that,
you know, people, African Americans and minorities across the bar are less privileged because they're trying to play catch up. I understand that.
Yeah.
And I'm totally for affirmative action. I'm totally for all of that. What I'm saying is, you know, you could have two people raised in the same home end up with two completely different outcomes. You know, one could be successful, one could be a bum on the street.
Mm-hmm.
What changes that is their resiliency,
mm-hmm.
okay? Their ability to, you know, rise up. And so if this person said, you know what, I need to be equal to my brother who's living underneath a bridge, guess what? All of society would be living under a bridge.
Yeah.
And I know that's an extreme example, mm-hmm. but that just goes to show you and to prove my point that, like, children need to be taught at a young age that, look, there's always going to be someone better than you, smarter than you, more determined than you. But guess what? You are special.
Yeah.
You are someone that can do whatever it is that you want to do. And you don't need to be compared to, you know, someone who is a billionaire. Because what you need to compare yourself to is yourself,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yep. And you showed me this great speech that Matthew McConaughey gave. Mm-hmm. I will definitely put a link in the video to everyone listening. I would recommend you listen to this afterwards. But he gave the speech. It looked like a Golden Globe or
it was Academy Awards.
Okay, Academy Awards. And they asked him, or he said that his role model in life, his person that he looks up to, was basically himself in 10 years. And then he was asked that same question in 10 years and asked if he was that person that he looked up to, if he was his hero. And he said, no, that's me when I'm 35 instead. And at 35, he had the same answer. It's always him in 10 years.
Yeah.
And he's constantly chasing the hero of himself that he wants to be. But he gives a good analogy of he's constantly striving to be the best version of himself.
Exactly.
You know?
Not comparing himself to any other hero, but just himself and where he wants to be.
I think it's good to sometimes have heroes. I do. But I also don't think that it's good to idolize anyone in an extremely godlike way. I think it's to see a hero for who they are, admire people for good intentions and stuff, but keep them in a certain box. Don't put them on a prophecy sort of level. Don't put them on a level of that gratitude and in that glorification. Put them as they're still human and they achieved where you want to achieve and it's still possible, you know?
And they didn't get there overnight.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They didn't get there overnight and it took a lot to become who they want to be, who they are, you know? And that's, it was a great speech, that's for sure.
It
definitely was a very, very good speech. It really just kind of opened your eyes to I have a hard problem of caring about what other people think too much.
Yeah.
You know, and recently, over these last, I would say my whole life I've done it, but the last 6-7 months, I've really turned that volume down and kind of focus on caring about what I think. Mm-hmm. And it's really been a lot less stressful, the most stressful-free 7 months I've ever had in my life. And also the most progressive 7 months I've ever had in my life. It's just been, I've just had time for myself. I haven't spent a lot of time on social media, so I haven't really had a time to, in a sense, compare my life to other people or anything like that, and just keep my energy on myself.
Yeah, but if you're always worried about what Tom is doing over there and you're ignoring what the heck you're doing, exactly. How is that progress?
It's none.
And at the end of the day, let's say that you had an obstacle that you could not overcome. Can you wake up in the morning, look yourself in the mirror, and say, you know what, I did my best and I'm going to try harder? Can you look at yourself in the mirror and say, I am not a failure? I am someone who tries and tries and tries and tries until I succeed. I am not compared to everyone else. I compare myself to myself, and I'm happy with myself, regardless of whatever happens. I think that's the most important, and I think society nowadays lacks that self-love. They see, you know, themselves through the lens of others.
Yeah, you're right. So many people like the lens of others. It's important to look through the lens of your own and build your own. But, you know, like we said from before, it's many of us have a problem with finding that lens and making that lens. But I think kind of what we talked about today can really help people. And even if anyone's listening, you know, definitely hit up Brandy for her services.
If they made it through this whole podcast, I congratulate you.
How do they get in touch with you?
If you wanted to seek independent life coaching services, you can do that. You can contact me at brandaleegoldman25@gmail.com. I'll spell it out for you. It's brandaleegoldman25@gmail.com. You can definitely contact me that way. If you're a student at Ivy Tech, I'm there on Tuesdays and Thursdays. We also have an additional life coach. Her name is Shelby. She's there Mondays and Wednesdays. And even if you're not a student at the Valpo location, if you're a student at the Lake County or even Michigan City, you're still an Ivy Tech student. You'd still be accepted in our campus for the life coaching services.
Cool. Isn't just through Ivy Tech for now?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
But if you wanted life coaching outside of Ivy Tech, you can just contact me at that email.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, I really, really appreciate you coming on. We had a great conversation.
Yeah, we did.
And we definitely got to have more of these.
Yes. It's very therapeutic.
Yeah, for real. Me too. I agree. And I'm assuming for the people who made it through this too.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for listening, everyone. Till next time.